Hello and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from the July 18th edition of People and the July edition of Women's Health. Some of the stories I will share today include how to sweat smart at any age, when going back to basics is better, and the truth about Gwyneth. How to sweat smart at any age. Hear this. How much you move is one factor you can control when it comes to aging well. Learn the simple habits that make a difference in every decade in this excerpt from Strong and Fit After 40, a women's health book by Ashley Nicole, CPT, from Women's Health Magazine. Getting older comes with many positives. Wisdom from years of experience, a greater appreciation for the little things, and tons of unforgettable memories, to name a few. But each decade can also bring health challenges, like decreased mobility and flexibility, muscle loss, weakened joints and bones, slower metabolism, and various illnesses such as hypertension, heart disease, and chronic pain. While some parts of aging are unavoidable, many issues we associate with getting older can be offset by something within your control: how much you move. Studies show that regular workouts can protect you from heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, stroke, and diabetes. Exercise lowers blood pressure, reduces body fat, improves blood flow, keeps intestines and the colon healthy, regulates key hormones, and raises good cholesterol and can lower bad cholesterol. In other words, regular sweat sessions can help reduce age-related ailments. Even better, you can supercharge those positive effects if you calibrate your routine and the unique fitness hurdles that can accompany it to wherever you're at in life. Here's a breakdown of how to adapt your movement habits so you can feel your best in every decade. In your 40s, the busy decade, the challenge, lack of time for exercise. This may be your most hectic time of life yet, and as a result, you might put other important things ahead of physical activity. But without regular exercise, your strength and cardiovascular fitness can begin to decline rapidly. What you can do: make workouts short but effective. Brief yet physically challenging exercise sessions can improve your health just as much as longer ones can, research has found. In a 3-month study at McMaster University in Canada, one group of participants rode a stationary bicycle at a steady, moderate pace for 45 minutes 3 times a week. Another group cycled for 10 minutes 3 days a week, alternating pedaling as fast as possible for 20 seconds with an easy, relaxed pace for 2 minutes. At the end of the experiment, the people in the short workout group improved their markers of cardio fitness and insulin sensitivity just as much as the people who cycled for 45 minutes. Mimic the brief but intense style with sprint interval training, SIT, where you max out and then have a short rest period, with almost any type of cardio exercise. In your 50s, the decade of change, the challenge, estrogen decline. When estrogen declines during perimenopause and menopause, your muscles have already begun to lose size and strength. These muscle and hormonal changes can play a role in fat accumulation in your middle and a decrease in your bone density. What you can do: try bone-boosting exercises. Your body is constantly breaking down and rebuilding bone, a process known as bone remodeling. But as your estrogen levels dip, you begin to lose more bone than you make. What's more, the bones you already have may weaken, putting you at greater risk for fractures. But estrogen isn't the only thing that matters when it comes to strong, healthy bones. The right type of exercise can actually help build back what you've lost. Scientists think that high-impact activity, exercises such as HIIT, jumping moves, competitive sports, and lifting weights, is key to triggering your skeleton to lay down more minerals. With the right routine and equipment that helps you safely load your bones and joints, like dumbbells or even a weighted vest, you can preserve and even increase bone density. In your 60s, the stay strong decade, the challenge: muscle loss. Sarcopenia, or muscle loss, is a natural part of aging. You can lose as much as 3 to 5% of your muscle mass each decade if you're not regularly active. That steady drain will catch up with you, making it harder to stand up from sitting or lift heavy groceries. What you can do: increase muscle with functional exercises. The muscles you build help you stay strong and insulate your body from injury. And you can do this at any age in a relatively short time. In fact, it only took 10 weeks for a group of people in their 60s to increase their leg strength by 42%, according to a study in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. As far as which exercises to prioritize, focus on functional movements such as squatting, bending down, lifting, and reaching, which mimic the way you use your body in daily life. Stronger hips and glutes allow you to walk longer, climb stairs better, and reduce your chances of falling, says Brina Maggio, director of a restorative exercise studio in Ventura, California. Bodyweight movements prepare your muscles for the ways they'll be used every day, whether it's sitting properly in a chair or going up and down staircases and hills. They will improve your reaction time so you can catch yourself when you trip and develop every muscle in your body to its full potential. By focusing on movements instead of muscle groups, you'll improve your entire neuromuscular system, not just your muscles, and advance overall body awareness and coordination. In every decade, stability matters. The challenge: poor balance. You might think you only need to work on your balance for a yoga session, but stability is important to your daily movement too. As muscle mass and bone density decline, your chances of losing your balance during everyday tasks, from carrying uneven loads, like your work bag, to standing on your toes to reach a high shelf, increase. What you can do: add flexibility training. When one muscle is weak or underused, others around it are forced to work harder or in unnatural ways to complete a move, which increases risk of injury. Flexibility training lets you address imbalances with moves that help to reduce strain on overworked muscles and improve range of motion. You have been listening to How to Sweat Smart at Any Age from Women's Health. When going back to basics is better. Simpler is smarter. Less is more. Learn to biohack your health with no-stress strategies that make longevity science actually doable. By Jessica McGalla. Photographs by Kimber Capriotti. Is it just me, or has the pursuit of wellness become wildly complicated? I don't take a daily fistful of supplements, jump into a cold plunge, or sit in an infrared sauna while deep breathing to transcendental music. Nothing against any of these practices. It's just that I only made it up to my ankles when I cold plunged the first and only time. Luckily, feeling like a happier, more energetic, disease-fighting machine doesn't have to be confusing, complex, or expensive. And you can start now with the tools you have on hand. We forget about the simple strategies, but we can get more benefit from them than we realize, says Alicia Robbins, MD, an OBGYN certified in lifestyle medicine. The payoff for these back-to-basics biohacks is big. Carving out time for small habits literally will add years to your life, Dr. Robbins adds. To be more specific, if you have healthy, evidence-based, backed lifestyle habits in place, you can tack on an extra 20 years, according to research in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. I asked experts what they recommend to their own patients and to the rest of us, then tried them on for size myself, learning firsthand that hacking your health doesn't have to be hard. Here are 6 things to implement starting today. Schedule sunlight. 10 to 20 minutes of sun exposure within the first hour of waking up is what Lauren Dahl Farah, MD, a preventive cardiologist and CEO of the functional medicine practice Palm Health in Ladue, Missouri, recommends. So that's just what I did, taking my cup of coffee outside to my patio in the Chicago burbs instead of scrolling social media at my kitchen counter. Yes, sometimes it is gloomy here, but the sun's rays still get through the clouds. This helps anchor your internal clocks and trigger the release of hormones like cortisol during the day and melatonin at night, supporting a healthy sleep-wake cycle, says Dr. Dahl Farah. Catching AM rays has been found to shorten the time needed to fall asleep, improve sleep duration by about 11 minutes, reduce middle-of-the-night waking, and produce better sleep quality per one study. By the end of my first week, I noticed that it was easier to drift off at night. Plus, it was a calming moment before my 2 grade school age boys came lumbering down the stairs. Take a walk every day. Far from fancy, walking is free and easy. No workout class signups to fret about. I have a dog who is ready for a walk anytime, so I had no problem getting in 30 minutes a day, which is the amount Dr. Robbins recs. What's fascinating about making it a habit is that walking is the ultimate exercise multitasker, offering these benefits. Helps joints stay mobile, boosts bone health, aids digestion, decreases inflammation, a driver of chronic disease, stabilizes blood sugar levels, especially if you go out after a meal, manages stress, lowers blood pressure, provides social connection if you BYOF, bring your own friend. Also amazing, the long-term brain boost. Maintaining a midlife exercise routine is associated with fewer amyloid plaques, a factor in Alzheimer's disease, compared to being more sedentary, and it helps preserve the thickness of your cerebral cortex, the outer layer of the brain responsible for higher level functions like memory, learning, and decision making, per research in the journal Alzheimer's and Dementia. Sedentary behavior and brain atrophy go hand in hand, say researchers, but physical activities like walking pump up the brain's gray matter. Sign up for something new. When preventive cardiologist Danielle Bilardo, MD, decided to try ballet for the first time as an adult in her late 30s, she had no idea of all the benefits it would bring. "I signed up only to enjoy and learn," she says. Dr. Bilardo quickly realized that the mental challenge, minus the pressure to perform, was a unique part of pirouetting as an adult. Plus, the social perks were immense, with women in their 20s through 60s in the class. "We are all different ages and athletic abilities, but we've bonded as a group," she says. "It's taught me that it's never too late to try something new." This reminds me of my own journey back to gymnastics, which I started again at age 41 after nearly 2 decades away from the sport. I'm flipping and doing other physical feats I never thought possible. It's built a sense of self-confidence that makes me step back and think, wow. To say nothing of the strength, balance, and flexibility gains, which Dr. Bilardo says she's found in ballet too. Your next move doesn't have to be a sport, but it should feel challenging and make you nervous in an excited sort of way. Sign up to learn paddle, calligraphy, or flower arranging. Take time to reset. As someone who convinced herself that doom scrolling was the way to wind down, I know how difficult it can be to fit relaxation into your day. Yet it's essential, and experts recognize this. I've learned the hard way that too much stress has bad health effects because of the constant surge of stress hormones, says Dana Ellis Huns, PhD, MPH, a senior clinical dietitian at UCLA Medical Center, who admits to experiencing burnout over the past several months. Taking a time out is essential for her now, whether that's 5 minutes of yoga, reading, or stargazing. We all have stress, but allowing it to build up is linked with faster cellular aging, according to research from Yale University. One thing that helps slow down that aging clock? Emotional regulation. Dr. Dal Farah likes cardiac coherence breathing for this, which is a type of diaphragmatic breathing in which you inhale through your nose for 5 seconds, feeling your belly rise, then slowly exhale through your mouth for another count of 5. This has been shown to significantly reduce stress and anxiety, basically helping you reset and recenter, she says. "It has become a personal go-to whenever I need to find calm and collect myself." Eat foods that lower inflammation. Fill your plate with colorful fruits and vegetables. It can't be said often enough. What we choose to eat can turn genes on and off to lower inflammation, says Melissa Young, MD, a functional medicine specialist at Cleveland Clinic. Go for purples, reds, dark greens, and more. Eat the rainbow to get a variety of plant compounds like antioxidants and polyphenols, which neutralize cell-damaging free radicals implicated in chronic diseases that occur with age. I love this rainbow-first approach because it gives me the freedom to decide what to eat based on what I like. Broccoli, really. And don't. Eggplant, I'm sorry. Without worrying about trying to eat buzzy superfoods I'm not jazzed about. Give your gut a break. Intermittent fasting may be trendy, but skip the 24-hour water fast the tech bros love. 12 to 14 hours is all you need for a productive fasting period, says Dr. Young. That's really just not eating between dinner at night and breakfast the next morning. Fasting promotes autophagy, the process in which our body clears out damaged cells to allow for regeneration of new ones, she explains. This break also gives your digestive system downtime, discourages acid reflux, and improves metabolic health by decreasing insulin resistance. Metamorphically closing the kitchen was key for me. It promoted better digestion without hunger pains or brain fog. See, longevity hacks don't have to make you suffer, and you can feel good doing them. What is biohacking anyway? The best definition is the art and science of optimizing human performance, says functional medicine specialist Melissa Young, MD. These are intentional changes in lifestyle practices to maximize our health so we can live a healthier, longer life. But the idea of biohacking has taken a turn recently as bro culture has co-opted the movement to be about waking up at 4:30 a.m., avoiding vegetables, and now eating raw chicken. Yes, it's real. Yes, it's gross and strongly not recommended. Throughout time, people have used strategies to enhance human capabilities. There will always be fringe elements and those who look to push the envelope, says Dr. Young. Biohacking has evolved, but for most women, the basics are safe ways to support well-being. Implementing small changes, also known as biohacks, over time promotes what longevity experts are now focusing on, health span. People want to live longer, Dr. Young says, but they want to live longer remaining healthy and without chronic conditions. Hear, hear. 78%. That's the increase in mortality risk when you have generally unhealthy habits. On the flip side, adopting these four healthy habits means that you have what researchers call the optimal lifestyle combination. Here they are. Don't smoke, get regular physical activity, snag adequate sleep, follow a healthy diet. This has been When Going Back to Basics is Better, from Women's Health Magazine. Tina Turner, Simply the Best. A new book gives a rare peek at the real Tina, as captured by famed photographer Peter Lindbergh. By Alexandra Schoenfeld, This is a People magazine exclusive. Over the course of her five-decade career, Tina Turner was known for her incredible voice, hypnotizing dance moves, and stunning ensembles. And no one captured her star quality quite like the photographer Peter Lindbergh. The duo's sincere friendship and mutual admiration are on display within the pages of the new photo book, Tina Turner by Peter Lindbergh, which features a collection of images, many never before seen, that the legendary photographer created over the course of their decades-long relationship. Peter let her be exactly who she was, radiant, powerful, vulnerable. Lindbergh's son Benjamin Lindbergh says of their work together, "That trust between them brought out something very real and tender." After meeting in the late 1980s, the two worked together several times and remained in contact until Lindbergh's death in 2019. They last saw each other during a 2016 visit Lindbergh made to Turner and husband Erwin Bach's home in Switzerland. Even if they didn't speak regularly, the bond was very much alive, Benjamin says of his father and Turner, who died in 2023. "I know Peter held that friendship close to his heart until the end." This has been a People magazine exclusive. Tina Turner, simply the best. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. Creatine craze. Can the supplement improve your life outside the gym? By Addison Alloain and Olivia Lupino. This is from Women's Health Magazine. Wellness Curious. Creatine has built up a serious personal brand in the fitness space. It's known as the go-to supplement for sweat devotees chasing strength, better recovery, and that extra rep. But its talents go way beyond the weight room. The powerhouse compound, it's naturally stored in your muscles and brain and plays a key role in producing cellular energy, boasts benefits in areas like cognition, hormonal health, and healthy aging. And supplementation can help nearly everyone, regardless of gender, says Gabrielle Lyon, DO, a physician and WH advisor. But given that many women eat smaller portions of food, they tend to get less creatine from red meat, fish, and dairy, adds Dana White, RDN, a sports nutritionist and athletic trainer in Fairfield, Connecticut. All the more reason to supplement. So should you be thinking about creatine even when you don't have that deadlift on your mind? Here's what this overachiever can and can't do for your overall wellness. It supplies all-day energy. It certainly helps. Creatine boosts the production of ATP, the energy currency your muscles rely on to power movement. This helps supply quick bursts of energy during high-intensity workouts, like sprinting or lifting, particularly when it comes to movements involving power, says Nicole Lund, RDN, a clinical nutritionist at NYU Langone and a personal trainer. But it's unclear whether this perk directly translates to activities in everyday life that require energy, like carrying groceries while walking across a parking lot or hoisting up children. Plus, most studies specifically look at how creatine affects energy for exercise. In theory, though, supplementation would help provide energy for daily activities too, White says. Creatine is responsible for muscle energy, and you use your muscles when you're not working out, she says. Having extra on board is probably a good thing, she theorizes, so your muscles can tap into it. It's a boon for your brain health. True. Taking a creatine sup can help with tasks involving the frontal cortex, such as cognition, memory, and attention, according to research in Nutrients. It also helped reduce mental fatigue in healthy adults who were up against a stressful, time-pressured serial calculation test, per separate research in Neuroscience and Biobehavioral Review. And in another exciting study, a combination of creatine supplementation and physical activity was effective in combating declines in cognitive processing associated with aging, similar to how it can help mitigate the age-related loss of muscle mass. Creatine also might be useful in treating age-related cognitive decline from diseases like Alzheimer's, as well as neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and Huntington's. Brain wins. It helps keep your hormones in check. This is possible. In each phase of the menstrual cycle, dramatic shifts in hormones like estrogen and progesterone affect the body's natural creatine levels, sometimes causing them to dip. Supplementing with creatine can help keep the levels more consistent throughout the cycle, says White. Women who are pregnant, postpartum, or postmenopausal also have altered creatine levels due to hormonal changes. But more research is needed in this specific area of its usage. While it seems as if creatine supplementation might help address these shifts, it's super important to consult your healthcare provider before adding it to your routine to ensure it's safe and appropriate for you, especially if you're expecting or thinking about getting pregnant. It's an emerging mental health treatment. Yes, low creatine stores in the brain may be associated with depressive symptoms, according to a new study in European Neuropsychopharmacology. When one group of individuals took creatine and underwent cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, while another took a placebo paired with CBT, both groups experienced reduced symptoms of depression overall, but depression scores were significantly lower in those who took creatine. Creatine is used in the frontal cortex, the part of the brain associated with mood, so the finding that creatine eased depressive symptoms makes sense, but more research is needed, White says. Supplementing with creatine may bring you back to a healthy range in the brain, which might combat symptoms of depression, Lund adds. However, the findings are preliminary, and more data is needed to determine how creatine supplementation can help more people suffering from depression. Take it safely. Look for creatine monohydrate, the most studied and optimal form, Lund says. Also, scan the label for third-party testing, indicated by an NSF Certified for Sport or Informed Choice badge to rule out contaminants. Women should take 3 to 5 grams once daily, White says. And while research is inconclusive about timing, there is some evidence that taking it before or after exercise may be beneficial. You can mix it with water, juice, or another beverage, and taking it in the presence of carbs increases creatine retention, according to Lund. FYI, we love Thorne's creatine powder because it's NSF certified for sport, it's expert backed, and it doesn't compromise on taste. $43 for 90 servings at thorne.com. You've been listening to Creatine Craze from Women's Health. The Truth About Gwyneth. The Men, the Movies, the Cleanses, the Controversies. A juicy new biography reveals the star as never before. By Liz McNeil, and this is a People Magazine exclusive. At just 12 days old, Gwyneth Paltrow arrived on her first Hollywood set to visit her mom, actress Blythe Danner. So began the illustrious life of the daughter of Danner and TV producer Bruce Paltrow. She quickly captivated audiences herself as she grew up, performing with her mother at the renowned Williamtown Theater Festival at 8 and winning an Oscar at 26 as the willowy, magnetic star of Shakespeare in Love. She became a 90s it girl, though she called that a joke to her closest friends. In 2008, the mom of two stepped into a new kind of role with the launch of Goop, which became an online platform for lifestyle and wellness advice and a showcase for her rarefied taste. Each detox cleanse, exorbitantly pricey gift guide, and unsubstantiated health endorsement, like inserting a jade egg vaginally to balance hormones, made headlines. A dishy new biography, Gwyneth, excerpted exclusively here, goes deep on both the glamour and the gossip. Now 52, Gwyneth is one of the biggest and most polarizing cultural influencers of the 21st century, says author Amy Odell. As the main narrator of her own public story, Gwyneth has masterfully shaped our perception of her. Talking to people from all different aspects of her life, you get a much more complex and fascinating picture. In 1984, Gwyneth enrolled at the posh private school Spence in Manhattan and quickly charmed her classmates. She had strangely potent charisma, and other Spence girls, even seniors, wanted to invest in knowing this new middle schooler. But other students seemed to feel threatened. One classmate recalled, "Not one person had a doubt that she was going to be famous." She excelled in theater and did well with Shakespeare, but struggled with academics. Gwyneth told friends that James Dawson, her advisor, had agreed to pass her in a class in which she was struggling so she could graduate. "You're going to win the Academy Award," Dawson told her. "I'm going to thank you when it happens," she said. She didn't. In her senior yearbook, she borrowed her parting words from Bill and Ted's excellent adventure. "Be excellent to each other and party on, dudes." In the nightmare column, other students got things written by yearbook editors like AP Spanish Lang. Gwyneth's was obesity. She dropped out of UC Santa Barbara early on, and in 1994, she met Brad Pitt at an audition for Legends of the Fall. She didn't get the part, but he later suggested she play his wife in the film Seven. However, she received another offer to appear with Keanu Reeves in Feeling Minnesota. Unsure which one to take, she consulted with a friend who said, "Well, who do you want to date, Brad Pitt or Keanu Reeves?" Gwyneth chose Seven and Pitt, and Cameron Diaz took the Feeling Minnesota part. The Pitt-Paltrow romance didn't stay hidden for long. The two would walk around the set holding hands and smoked cigarettes together outside their trailers, Gwyneth holding hers like a 30s movie star. As she began wowing directors with her charisma and talent, including her ability to quickly learn accents, she was cast in the Jane Austen adaptation Emma. During Emma's filming, Gwyneth expressed doubts to one crew member that Pitt was right for her and admitted that she had a crush on Hugh Grant. "Brad and I had very different upbringings," she told an interviewer. "So when we go to restaurants and order caviar, I have to say to Brad, 'This is beluga and this is ocetra.'" Gwyneth's performance got rave reviews when Emma was released in 1996. After Emma came out, Gwyneth went over to her friend, the makeup artist Kevin Aucoin's place, and cried about Pitt multiple times. He wanted to be with her, but seemed to feel threatened by her success and all the attention she received. Aucoin's advice to Gwyneth was frank: "You really need to end this." Gwyneth and Pitt never publicly gave a concrete reason for their 1997 breakup, though two people recalled a rumor about it stemming from Gwyneth cheating on Pitt with co-star John Hannah while she was filming Sliding Doors. She told Howard Stern in 2015, "I wasn't ready and he was too good for me." She began dating Ben Affleck in late 1997. Affleck was struggling with alcoholism and a gambling habit around the time he met Gwyneth, who was attracted to his intellect. Her friends had reservations about him because he didn't always reciprocate her affection. He, at times, seemed more interested in playing video games with the guys at his house than being with Gwyneth. She spoke openly about how much she enjoyed their sex life. She told Aucoin one day that she loved when Affleck engaged in a certain sex act. When she got the script for Shakespeare in Love, which started filming in 1998, she first turned it down without reading the entire thing. Winona Ryder's name had also been bandied about for the role. It was never sent to Winona as an offer, but Winona wanted to do the part, and Gwyneth had recommended her for the part, said producer Harvey Weinstein. After a story about Gwyneth allegedly stealing the script from Winona's coffee table reached the media, Gwyneth told friends that Ryder had started the rumor and insisted she'd receive the script through her agent. Shakespeare in Love opened on December 11th to ravishing reviews. Gwyneth and Affleck broke up the next month after a little over a year. Their physical chemistry couldn't overcome his self-destructive impulses, which may have even included cheating on her. After they broke up, Gwyneth said, "I love men even though they're lying, cheating scumbags." She was nominated for an Oscar in 1998 and Ralph Lauren was asked to make her gown. She requested a design inspired by Grace Kelly. Leading up to the awards, she hadn't been eating much and kept losing weight, necessitating extra fittings, where Gwyneth asked the Ralph Lauren team in New York to bring the neckline lower and lower. Lauren became so frustrated that he didn't want to send the dress back to Los Angeles. But his team convinced him and found a skilled seamstress to fit the pieces of the dress onto Gwyneth there. The designers at Ralph Lauren noticed that something looked off when she wore it that night. The fabric was puckering, a little wrinkly, loose around her torso, as if she had instantly lost 10 pounds. They realized she hadn't worn the inner detachable corset that came with the gown, which would have made it fit more snugly. Lauren was not happy about the fit. After she won the Oscar, she stayed in bed for 10 days, overwhelmed. She reunited with Affleck that fall and focused on her health. Affleck's addiction issues resurfaced, and he and Gwyneth broke up for good in October 2000. While he had been turning to alcohol, she was practicing Ashtanga yoga 6 times a week, meditating daily, and watching her diet. Hoping to change up her serious image, in 2001 she played an overweight woman in the Farrelly's Brothers comedy Shallow Hal. Before filming began, 120-pound Gwyneth slipped into a rubbery 25-pound fat suit that was meant to make her look like she weighed 350 pounds. She planned to walk around downtown Charlotte. Barry Teague, a line producer, had been instructed to keep enough of a distance so that she felt like she was alone. Teague, who weighed 325 pounds himself, felt pained as he watched two middle-aged men hurry around her like she was a trash can. Even by the relatively permissive standards of 2001, Shallow Hal generated controversy for using fatness as a punchline. Gwyneth told friends that she felt like the film could bring attention to what would later be widely termed fat shaming. In an interview with Entertainment Tonight, Gwyneth said, "I got a real sense of what it would be like to be that overweight, and every pretty girl should be forced to do that." Devastated by her father's death from oral cancer in 2002, she found solace in dating Coldplay rock star Chris Martin and hoped to start a family. Both aspired to some kind of soulful, intellectual seriousness at a moment when their work was pulling them toward mass appeal and triviality. Yet her friends felt like something didn't quite click. Martin was an introvert who could be socially awkward, but he was incredible on stage, and Gwyneth, who was ready to settle down, was seduced by his persona. They married on December 5th, 2003, and had daughter Apple in 2004, followed by son Moses in 2006. A few years later, Gwyneth's friendship with longtime pal Madonna crumbled. Their relationship reached a breaking point when Madonna showed up to an island where Gwyneth and Martin were vacationing. Madonna seemed to know that Gwyneth would be there, which Gwyneth seemed to find strange, a friend remembered. Madonna then insisted Gwyneth and Martin join her for a big group dinner at a long table where Bandana went off on her daughter, Lourdes. Gwyneth and Martin were disgusted by the behavior. "I can't be around this woman anymore," Martin told Gwyneth. "She's awful." Gwyneth agreed that Madonna was toxic and ended the friendship. Gwyneth launched Goop in 2008 and wrote multiple best-selling cookbooks focused on wellness. In It's All Good, she shared a 2011 scare when she thought she'd had a stroke, which, along with her father's cancer, led her to seek answers from various health gurus. She went to see a host of doctors. She referred to them as doctors, but not all of them were medical doctors. She was convinced something was wrong with her. They suggested it was a migraine headache coupled with a panic attack. Gwyneth presumed this was her body reacting to her busy schedule and the accompanying air travel, stress, and adrenaline. Plus, she had recently been drinking wine and eating French fries. At this point, Gwyneth had been trying to optimize her life for years, overriding ordinary emotional pain, anxiety, grief, anger, through physical interventions like intense exercise and radical changes in diet. One of her doctors, Alejandro Junger, advised an elimination diet. Junger's plan forbade coffee, alcohol, dairy, eggs, sugar, shellfish, deep water fish, potatoes, tomatoes, bell pepper, eggplant, corn, wheat, meat, soy, and anything processed. Gwyneth built a diet out of whatever was left. On March 25, 2014, she shared on Goop that she and Martin were consciously uncoupling. Readership was so huge, the site crashed. While she privately struggled to generate optimism about the separation, she found a way to do it publicly, to turn this painful, confusing failure into a project that might inspire and illuminate, and maybe boost the brand. While some of Gwyneth's old friends were shocked by her divorce, she told them they had separated a year earlier and that she had come to terms with it. She turned Goop into a popular platform, but could still laugh at herself. During leadership team meetings, Gwyneth sometimes brought in one of her gurus to hold a self-improvement workshop. At one such meeting, a facilitator asked the executives to take turns saying one thing they believed to be true about themselves, but wasn't true of anybody else in the room. When it was Gwyneth's turn, she said with a smile, "I won an Oscar." Her team's reaction amounted to a playful, "Gwyneth, F off." Gwyneth was committed to covering products and experiences that translated her own tastes for her audience, however bizarre or inaccessible they might be. The Tikkun Spa in Santa Monica was featured in early 2015 in Goop's Santa Monica City Guide, with a focus on its vaginal steaming treatment. It went up quietly at first, then the internet swarmed. The spa's owner, Nikki Schwartz, recalled Gwyneth coming in to do the steam with celebrity friends and telling her that the treatment changed her life. Medical experts scoffed and warned that the steaming, like some of Goop's other alternative health recommendations, could be dangerous. Meanwhile, underneath the company's glossy surface, office dynamics were sometimes difficult. Executives struggle to navigate Gwyneth's impatience and perfectionism. They seemed threatened by each other based on whom Gwyneth was favoring in a given moment, and she made it clear. Employees who worked up the nerve to go into her office were often met with impatience, an attitude of, "What do you want? Get it over with." Goop weathered numerous controversies and lawsuits, but the attention only drove more traffic to the site. In 2017, she hosted a health forum. Attendees traveled from all over for the summit, where they could start the day with a saline IV. Gwyneth loved IVs and sometimes had them administered during meetings in the office. Guests could then try out sound bath meditation, as well as a 10-minute facelift during which an organic sugar thread was inserted into the cheek. Gwyneth told her staff she subscribed to this along with a little filler, though she was open about disliking Botox, saying that it made her look crazy and like Joan Rivers. Wed to producer Brad Falchuk since 2018, Gwyneth became an empty nester in 2024 and returned to acting opposite Timothy Chalamet in Marty Supreme, slated to open this December 25th. Goop has struggled to turn a profit, but she remains a coveted face for luxe brands like Saint Laurent. Gwyneth had told staff that she wanted to build a business she could pass down to Apple, who one person said had genuine interest in Goop. "Whatever direction she chooses," said her agent and close friend, CAA's Richard Lovett, "she's not going to be the next Gwyneth, but she will be the original Apple." As it stands now, Gwyneth will probably be remembered less for her film work than what she chose to do with it outside of Hollywood. Her greatest cultural impact isn't popularizing Calvin Klein fashion or jade eggs. It's showing the world just how much consumers will spend for the luxury of being well, no matter what science tells us. Whatever happens with Goop, Gwyneth will be fine. Thanks for joining us today for the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Join us again next week for more exciting stories from women's magazines. Have a great day.